This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
So yesterday we thought that just maybe it was a political move to bring a derelict RV, park it in front of Councilmember Lisa Herbold's home because she is someone who has gotten in the way of clearing the homeless encampments, to clearing the derelict RV problem, not just in West Seattle, but across the city of Seattle. It wasn't. It was actually weirdly a coincidence. Now, she reacted exactly the way I said she would. Do you remember what I said yesterday?
I have it written down.
Yeah. Tell me if I said she would say this.
I don't think it's right to make fun of the plight of people who live in their homes.
And then she went on to say that, oh, you know, it's not unlikely that I would ever have a week that goes by without an RV. Happen all the time. RVs are put in front of me. She did exactly what I said she was going to do.
Yeah, you hit that one right on the head.
I knew it because I'm smarter than these people. I should run for something. But it turns out it didn't matter. I know she wanted to play as if she was above it all. No one was making fun of anyone living in a RV. That actually didn't happen. But it turns out this was an actual RV. It belongs to a woman named Briar. She's a pregnant woman. She lives with her boyfriend. They are not homeless in the traditional sense because they've got this RV that they plan on living in, at least temporarily, as they figure things out. They're struggling to get by, and this is a way for them to sort of get on that right path. But it is a coincidence that it was put right in front of the home of a council member as we've been having a conversation across the city and really across the region as to whether or not this would be done in protest.
We were actually going to park the trailer on the corner by the grocery mart down the street a few blocks, but down the street a few blocks is the bad neighborhood of West Seattle.
Okay.
And me and my boyfriend thought that was a bad idea, so we called Robert in the other car and we said, hey, we should park it somewhere else. But we were also running out of time for the U-Haul to go back to its actual owners of the U-Haul.
So that's Briar talking with our sister station, Kyle Radio, and the Dory Monson Show. It is an insane coincidence. Insane coincidence.
Well, I plan on moving the trailer at some point, hopefully looking for maybe a truck to move it. I also plan on, surviving every day I can.
She is trying to survive. And anybody who listens to the show and who listens to Dory, frankly, on our sister station, we all know that we're compassionate and we want to put her in a position to succeed. What I found outrageous in all of this was the progressive Seattle Twitter trolls up in arms, claiming that when they believed that this was a political move, they were outraged. They said that this is harassment. They said that this was terrorizing Lisa Herbold, which of course is nonsense because they say something quite different when you guys are living across the street from derelict RVs, that we need to grow up, that we need to have some compassion for people who are living it on the street, that there's nothing dangerous or wrong living across the street from derelict RVs, and they call us NIMBYs. Not in my backyard, it's an insult. And yet they're the ones acting like NIMBYs. Erica Barnett, a troll blogger, going insane on her Twitter feed today, upset that Briar, this woman, is not the victim that she had hoped to use to make a political point. You have activists like Speculation, Matt Watson, upset that they can't use this story anymore to clearly go after a colleague of mine on our sister station. They don't care about the people who are living in these RVs. They don't. I would argue, in some cases, and not in all cases, I think the vast majority of people are making good faith arguments, not these folks. There's a small group of folks who want to keep people out on the streets because it allows them to go on their Twitter feed or their Facebook account to proclaim how much they care about people without actually doing anything. Because as long as they're living out on the street in a park or in a derelict RV, as long as they're there, they can point to them and say, I care. Aren't I a good person? Because I care about these people, yet they're not doing anything to get them out of that situation. You guys are, we are, which is why we talk about these issues so much. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
CNN's Christina McFarlane asked NBA players James Harden and Russell Westbrook whether or not they feel a little bit differently speaking out following what the NBA has been doing and has kind of been kowtowing to, which is censoring comments that are critical of China. She didn't get very far in her questions.
Hi, Christina McFarlane, CNN. The NBA has always been a league that prides itself on its player and its coaches being able to speak out openly about political and societal affairs. I just wonder, after the events of this week and the fallout we've seen, whether you would both feel differently about speaking out in that way in future. It's a legitimate question. Exactly. This is an event that's happened this week during the NBA. This particular question has not been answered. James.
Oh, they're moving on.
Any other questions?
Yeah, they're moving on. It is weird that they call in a CNN reporter and expect it to be a traditional basketball question. What do you think CNN is there for? Why would they be there for?
Was CNN going to ask about James Harden, you know, the defense that he's preparing for?
Is that a player?
James Harden, yeah. That's what the question was being asked to.
He's
James
on
Harden.
The team, the
Houston Rockets.
Houston Rockets.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I knew that.
He plays a shooting guard for them?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
He's a guard. He shoots a lot.
Yeah. A lot.
A ton. The context of this, I think, is very important because fans with signs that said Free Hong Kong have been getting kicked out of games while the NBA tries rather desperately, in the words of Mediaite, to retain its relationship with China. Why might they want to do that? Because there's a lot of money to be made. The NBA is kowtowing to the Chinese censorship and hypersensitivity because it maintains a good profit margin for them. That's what they're about. That's problematic. Now, I generally think that you should keep all politics out of all sports. However, when you put yourself in a position where, number one, you have allowed all the players and all of the coaches and owners to pretty much take whatever political position that you want, well, then this is going to happen. Now, you could have chosen not to allow any political speech, right? And just say, no, you know what? As a league, we want to get out of that because things like this can happen. Okay, that's different. But it's a bad look for the NBA to be taking this position all because they want to placate the Chinese government, which ironically was the exact satirical message that was made by South Park last week. Number two, again, I'd prefer you not be political. However, when you put yourself in a position where you are cooperating with a country that does not value free speech or freedom, you're kind of asking for problems. And I feel bad for James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Because I have no idea whether they are upset with what's going on. I have no idea whether or not they want to even touch this controversy. But now we're putting players in positions where they are going to be asked these questions. And the NBA did this. This is the fault of the NBA. This is not the fault of the fans. This is not the fault of the reporters who are asking questions, even if it is CNN. And it's not the problem. It's not what's the Rockets guy's name, the manager? Daryl Morey?
The GM.
Like, he expresses support for the Hong Kong protests. He gets in hot water. The NBA apologized for it? That is absolutely ridiculous. He didn't ask for this. The NBA created policies that led to this. This is on them. This is 100% on them. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. I'd love to get your thoughts on this, especially if you're an NBA fan. I am kind of curious if you view this, because they are siding with China and censorship and lack of freedom. Do you view this the same way you told me you viewed the taking the knee in the NFL during the national anthem? Is this something that you're willing to give up on the NBA? I kind of feel like more people are apt to give up on the NBA in Seattle, in this general area, than not, if they're even loving the NBA right now, because there's still that Sonic stuff.
It's easy to hate the NBA.
Right? That's why, you know why I hate the NBA?
Why?
Because the Sonic stuff.
Nice. Good job, Jay. You know what? I'm a Jason Rantz fan now.
Thank you. Now, you've been here for 5 weeks.
Oh. Well, you won me over.
You're just the worst. 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget, you should download the KHTH smartphone app. Text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link so you can listen to the station and get live breaking news alerts on your phone, whether it's an iPhone or an Android. We got you covered. Text app to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
Homelessness and the opioid crisis is impacting most communities in Western Washington. We talk about how it hits Seattle and Olympia and Everett, but they're all bigger cities with bigger budgets. What about some of the smaller communities? They are having to get a little bit creative in how they tackle the problem. In Monroe, they've got some problems they're trying to address before they get out of hand, and I think they're doing it in the right way. Joining me to discuss is the mayor of Monroe, Jeffrey Thomas. Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for coming on.
Jason, thank you very much for having me.
So Snohomish County seems to be, for the most part, ahead of a lot of other areas in that they address this problem with an embedded social worker program. So take us through how the city of Monroe is handling the homelessness and opioid crisis.
Yeah, so a couple years ago, back in 2016, I added to our budget with council's approval an embedded social worker. And what that is we contract with Snohomish County for a half-time position of a social worker. She goes out with one of our sergeants, makes contacts with people who are homeless, and helps get them in contact with different resources. Program's been really successful. We've helped people through drug treatment, and we've also helped people get into housing. And they've also given us, through the Embedded Social Worker Program, access to the Diversion Center at Snohomish County, which allows us to, when we do make an arrest, get people to the Diversion Center, sometimes in lieu of incarceration, when they're willing to accept help. And so it has been successful, and I look forward to talking to you more about it.
Yeah, and the thing is, part of the reason why it's successful is we know that when you offer people a choice, they usually will make the right one, but you've got the threat of incarceration there in case they're not willing to get the help that we're all offering them. And I think that that's a huge difference between, say, a Seattle approach and the approach in Monroe and Arlington and Marysville, which is, yeah, you don't have to take us up on our offer. We want you to. We desperately want you to. But if you don't, we're going to have to actually enforce the law.
That's correct. And we do just that in Monroe. When we can't help you accept the help that we're offering, you're right. We do have to take the incarceration route. And sometimes that is what it takes for people to make the change in their life, to get off drugs, to find housing, to get the treatment they need for mental and behavioral health issues and so on.
What's the issue look like on the ground in Monroe over the course of the last, let's say, 5 years? Because obviously, you know, every year that goes by, there's this threat that it's going to snowball and become an even bigger issue.
Yeah, well, I would say that generally speaking, as the degree of homelessness has increased in the region and quite frankly across the U.S. and into Canada, the number of people who are homeless in our community has also increased. And the great news is that there are a lot of people who have accepted help through the Embedded Social Worker mm-hmm. Program. On the ground, though, we do have a couple dozen people that are people that we frequently and repetitively make contact with, both with the Embedded Social Worker and also with law enforcement. And really, what it's coming down to for our community is needing more facilities to take people that want help, because there should never be a wait list for people that want help, right? And also having facilities and changes in laws so that we can take the people that don't want help off the street to get them the help that they need. So Ricky's Law, which a House Representative Davis out of Shoreline brought forward a couple years ago and got adopted, I think that's a step in the right direction. Yeah. Where you can involuntarily commit people for substance use disorder. And it's changes in law like that that we could use to get people off the street and get people the help they need when they're just not of clear mind to understand that, hey, it's not healthy, it's not safe for me to live on the street. I should be getting help. And that's where I think that the government right now, local government, could use help getting people off the street and the help that they need.
Mayor Jeffrey Thomas of Monroe is joining me on the line. We're talking about how smaller communities like Monroe are dealing with the crisis of homelessness and the opioid epidemic. And as you know, Mr. Mayor, they're, in a lot of cases, they are virtually the same, where they're interconnected, where you've got people who are living out on the streets and they're shooting up outside of businesses. And, you know, sometimes all you need to do, and I, you know, the Everett Herald had a really nice write-up about this, is you're just streamlining some of the processes that businesses need to go through. In fact, one of the things that jumped out at me, stores can sign a form that allow the police just to offer the trespassing notice without having to do it every single time that a complaint is made. And that seems to be another smart move that could really cut down on some of the hassle that a lot of people experience when trying to address these problems.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we have a number of businesses that have signed those forms that allow us to do that. But we've also got other businesses in town that haven't done that yet. And I'm really looking forward to those businesses getting on the program and agreeing to allow us to do things like this. It allows us to make contact with somebody who is obviously in need, and to make, you know, give us one more opportunity to make that contact and get them the help they need. Yeah. And yes, that is something that we've been promoting for about 2 or 3 years now.
So Councilmember Russell Wita over in Sultan, he's actually running for mayor there. He was on the show last week, and he's pushing this idea that in his general area, which, you know, are Monroe, you've got Gold Bar Index, all smaller communities, and he wants to see an approach that creates more partnerships. Is that something that you're open to?
Oh, absolutely. We have a homeless policy advisory committee that we started earlier this year, and that is one of the things we're looking at. Just like with the embedded social worker, where we have this wonderful partnership with Snohomish County, we also need to have the cities in the area join together and look at something like a mini diversion center, where we can have places for people to go. So you've got that shelter component, but you've also got the help component. Mm-hmm. For a limited number of services in the Sky Valley. And then for those more extensive services, being able to have transportation to get them into Everett for the help they need. The thing is that when we do take people to Everett, a lot of times they come right back because it's, you know, it's their home. Even though they're homeless, Monroe is their home. So, yes, I agree. One of the problems we've had in our community in the past is that some cities have taken actions before changes in court cases a decade ago that have resulted in homeless people moving into neighboring communities like Monroe. And that's, you know, that's not helpful for anybody. So I absolutely agree with Councilmember Wita. I think working together like that would bring a really good benefit to the Sky Valley community out where we live.
Do you guys get any pushback from the community? You bring some of these policies that we're talking about here to Seattle. If all of a sudden the navigation team actually arrests people who don't take us up on our offers of services, they're immediately called out. They say this is criminalizing the homeless, that you lack compassion. Are you getting that kind of pushback in Monroe?
You know, every once in a while, yes. And what I would counter with is this, is that you need, so there's the compassion part, which is helping people, you know, it's going out and offering services. But I would say that it is also not compassionate to let, to enable somebody to continue to live in a situation that is unsafe and unhealthy, where we're continuing to have to make contacts through our police, embedded social worker, parks department. I know at least five people in my life that had issues with drugs in their past, that four of them, I'm very aware, have had been arrested, had gone either to jail or prison, and all four of them, because of that, are clean today.
Wow.
And to be able to say that compassion is only offering services and that that people have to voluntarily accept them, it forgets the other side of the equation, that sometimes compassion is holding people accountable and having people go to jail, go to
exactly.
prison, because that's where they can get help and that's where they can feel what the consequences are. Again, I know five people today that are very productive people in our community. I know that four of them have been in prison, and if it were not for that prison experience, they very well could still be out there on the street, homeless and addicted to drugs. And to me, that's not compassionate. That's just turning a blind eye to somebody. It's not a moral way to approach things.
You are 100% correct. My last question for you, I only got about 30 seconds left. Do you support the move by the Snohomish County prosecutor, Adam Cornell, to get rid of the 2-gram policy, which basically says if you're found with 2 grams or under of illegal substances, you can pretty much guarantee you're not getting arrested or charged?
Yeah, our city council sent a letter in support for Snohomish County holding people accountable at 2%. I'm sorry, at 2 grams or less. Even though that policy exists today, the city of Monroe is still prosecuting people. Yeah. It's just we're doing it as misdemeanors. So we do support tools in the toolbox, and we are very thankful for our partnership with Snohomish County, especially for the embedded social worker program.
Oh man, we could use a lot more Jeffrey Thomases all across Washington State. We've been talking about homelessness and the opioid crisis with the mayor of Monroe, Jeffrey Thomas. Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Jason. Have a great day.
Absolutely. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770, KTTH, and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Republicans across the state have been particularly bothered by Attorney General Bob Ferguson. He seems to be more inclined to target President Trump and make headlines than actually fighting for you and me. And it's why, in part at least, Brett Rogers of Lake Stevens has announced he's running for Attorney General. His slogan, protecting the rights of all Washingtonians. Brett had an 18-year career as an officer with the Seattle Police Department. He ended up becoming a lieutenant. He also, while working full-time as a cop, completed law school, then ended up maintaining a small practice where he was focused primarily on pro bono cases, and he joins us now. Brett, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yes, Jason, thank you for your time.
So why is Bob Ferguson not the right attorney general for Washington State?
Well, so there's a number of reasons. First and foremost, I hate cliches, but he really has weaponized the attorney general's office. My opinion is it seems that he's making it his personal mission to destroy people and businesses rather than impartially enforcing the law. Beyond that, as you mentioned, he's focusing too much on suing the federal government when there's plenty of work to be done here in Washington.
So let's talk about your first claim. What are some examples in your view of him trying to destroy either individuals or businesses?
So one of the more recent examples, and I know up front it's probably not going to be a very popular one, is the opioid settlement with against Purdue Pharma. A number of states, I believe, at least half the states that were part of that litigation accepted a settlement offer. Ferguson did not, and one of the reasons he cited was that it left the business, the family behind the business, it left them with too much money. I don't understand why he thinks that's his place to decide that. I believe in accountability. If somebody violates the law, they deserve to be punished, face the consequences, but equal to what anybody else would face. But Ferguson seems to make it his mission to be the final arbiter of what is fair and just. And that's just one example.
So, obviously, there's a lot of attention being paid to the fact that Attorney General Bob Ferguson goes after Trump administration almost every single day, it kind of feels like. But, obviously, there are circumstances in which, you know, one would argue, regardless of who's the president, you should get involved. So, from your position, what role should an attorney general play in targeting a president's administration, regardless of who's in office?
Yes. If there is an issue that directly affects Washington State or the people of Washington, and there's a direct harm, then absolutely. There definitely is a time and a place for litigation between the states and the federal government. However, here in Washington, we have our members of Congress and our senators that represent our voices in the nation's capital. It's through them that we get to express our policy desires. The courts are not the proper venue to try to rehash policy disagreements.
How much of this do you think is driven by ideology?
Oh, I think the vast majority of it is. Ferguson, to me, seems to be in lockstep with the National Democrat Party, which I think is it's fairly reasonable to say that it's their mission to destroy President Trump simply because he won in 2016.
So do you believe any of the cases against the Trump administration that Attorney General Bob Ferguson jumped on? Do you think any of them are legally valid?
You know, to the best of my knowledge, Ferguson has either initiated or joined 50 cases against the Trump administration. So I don't have instant recall on all 50 of those. None immediately spring to mind, although I will allow that there may be issues that would be a valid.
Yeah.
It would be valid to take the administration to court.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Brett Rogers. He is running for Attorney General. He is facing Bob Ferguson. His website, by the way, Brett Rogers 4AG. Spell it all out. BrettRogersforAG.com. So it's interesting. So I'm going through your website, and a lot of the commentary that you have there on the issue speaks to me. And one thing that I think you're talking about that I'm not hearing Bob Ferguson talk about or anybody talk about is free speech on college campuses. Why was that on your list? What do you see your role playing out in regards to free speech on college campuses?
So one of the roles of Attorney General is to be the legal advisor to the various state departments, boards, and commissions, and those include state-run universities. The other part of the AG role is to either initiate litigation or to defend suits against the state of Washington and its subsidiaries. So when free speech is being hindered on state colleges, that is a state action that Bob Ferguson has a prime opportunity to advise those institutions what they're doing, how they're infringing on other people's rights, putting them on notice, letting them know that if they continue to behave in that manner, that defending them in court against the inevitable lawsuits would be exceedingly difficult.
So is that what you would have done in the case of, let's say, last year the University of Washington in Seattle decided to put forward this policy that suggested campus groups have to sort of foot the bill for the any security, and the University of Washington College Republicans stood up and said, this is not tenable for us. You've hit us with several thousands of dollars. They end up suing. They get a settlement in their favor.
Absolutely. The policies need to be content neutral. If the University of Washington decides that any guest speaker requires some sort of fee, so long as it's legal and reasonable, that's fine. But it has to be applied uniformly across the board, regardless of who the speaker is or what their message is.
So Ferguson, as far as I can tell, has been silent on heroin injection sites. Do you believe local cities should be allowed to test the idea out, or would you intervene and say, no, you can't do it?
I would absolutely intervene. I believe that the U.S. Department of Justice would provide some support on that as well. I think if you look at what has gone on in the city of Seattle, enabling drug abuse and drug addiction does not solve anything. And the safe injection sites, to me, would just be a furtherance of that. We have, you know, possession of narcotics is illegal. Even if it's not prosecuted in the city of Seattle, to a point, it's a state law. I would not be okay with safe injection sites opening up in the state.
How would you work with the fact that right now the state of Washington is a sanctuary state? So folks who are in this country illegally can count on the state agencies and local agencies to not participate with ICE in, you know, requesting detainers.
Yeah, so the Attorney General's office is an independent constitutional office. So I want to be a little bit careful with how I frame this issue right now, since we're a year out from the election. But I believe that the AG's office would have a bit more freedom than the rest of the state and I would certainly be willing to work with the federal government. But my approach is, and the way I see it, is that law-abiding citizens are not second-class citizens. So my primary, the lens I would view this through is, why are people who are either citizens or immigrate legally, why do they have to abide by one standard? Those who violate the law, come in illegally, are held to a lower standard. That, to me, is discriminatory, and in many state and city laws and ordinances, one of the causes of action of discrimination is national origin. I think that's an avenue that's ripe for exploring.
So, you know, how toothless is the Attorney General's office if a Republican or an independent is in office when Olympia is controlled by Democrats? What can actually be done?
Yeah, so I forget if it went to trial or was settled out, but there was an issue a number of years ago with Rob McKenna and Christine Gregoire, and the AG's office does have some independent powers. My vision of the AG's office is to be sort of a watchdog. One of my semi-slogans is that I would represent the people of the state, not the government bureaucracy, and that requires a little bit of unpacking because I would be serving to advise state representatives. But as I see it, that all government officials work for the people, and I would do everything in my power to make sure that all government officials, regardless of party, are held to that bar.
Brett Rogers is running for Attorney General of Washington State in 2020. He's taken on Bob Ferguson. The website, BrettRogers4AG.com. It's all spelled out, F-O-R, not the number 4, AG.com. BrettRogers4AG.com. Brett, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. We wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancho, 1-800-465-877. If you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Really do appreciate you tuning in today and every day. If you miss any of the show, you can subscribe to the podcast. Bernie Sanders today discussed the heart attack that he suffered through. And he put it into a video, a message to his supporters. But something that you'll notice very quickly, much more subdued. No energy that he normally has because this guy just suffered a heart attack, but he still has the passion.
And I know it's not easy because this particular campaign, we're taking on everybody. We're not only taking on Trump and the Republican establishment. We're not only taking on the Democratic establishment. We're not only taking on Wall Street and the insurance companies and the drug companies, fossil fuel industry.
Oh, wow.
Military,
this just keeps
industrial
going.
Complex.
Does it stop? Oh, no, he's just going.
The corporate media.
No, yeah, no. Okay.
That so often refuses to deal with the real issues facing this country. Oh. That's what we're taking on.
Okay. Unfortunately for him and any of his supporters, there's no way that the American people will vote for someone who just had a heart attack. And the question is, how quickly can he put this image behind him? Because that's not inspirational as a candidate. It would be inspirational as a symbol, right? But I don't know how many American voters would say, okay, the guy who's already really old, we're going to give him the chance to become president. Speaking of which, the actual president, President Trump right now, is at a Keep America Great rally in Minneapolis, Minnesota. In the waning moments of the show, I thought we would catch in live as the speech is ongoing to see what he has to say.
In 2020. America now has the number one economy anywhere in the world, and it's not even close. You know, I'm dealing with China right now. They're in Washington. We're going to see if we make a deal. But they want to make it. We're going to determine whether or not we want to make it. But they've been very nice. And today I got a call from one of the top representatives. He said, congratulations, Mr. President, on having a truly great, great economy. That's pretty nice. We picked up since the election trillions of dollars in value, and China has lost trillions of dollars in value. I will say this. If our opponent had won that election, you know what would have happened? Right now, China would become the night it would be. The number one economy anywhere in the world, and right now I can tell you they're not even close.
President speaking live at a Keep America Great rally in Minneapolis, Minnesota, part of his 2020 re-election campaign.
Our country is stronger than ever before because we are proudly putting, for the first time in a long time, we are putting America first.
Huge crowd, by the way. Mike Pence spoke earlier.
And I have to say, there are a lot of very beautiful red T-shirts in the audience. That was a record sale. They did very well. And I'll tell you what, cops love Trump. Trump loves cops.
The red shirts say cops for Trump.
Our bold pursuit of this pro-American agenda has enraged, and you know what's happened? It's enraged the failed ruling class in Washington. Not easy to get them out, but we're doing it slowly but surely. These corrupt politicians and the radical leftists got rich bleeding America dry, and they knew that my election would finally end their pillaging and looting of our country. And that's what they were doing. And that's what they continue to try and do. That is why from day one, the wretched Washington swamp has been trying to nullify the results of a truly great and democratic election, the election of 2016. They're trying. They're not getting very far. They want to erase your vote like it never existed. They want to erase your voice, and they want to erase your future. But they will fail because in America, the people rule again.
That was President Trump speaking live in Minneapolis, Minnesota for a Keep America Great rally. I noticed that CNN nor MSNBC were covering this, so I thought we would dip in towards the end of the show so you can actually get a fair opportunity to hear the message of the president, because this time around, the media is not going to be giving him free airtime. They realize that that was a mistake, and the media doesn't want him or any Republican in power again. So, when given the opportunity, we will allow you to hear his speech. Fox News at the top of the hour will have an update on some of the commentary coming from the beginning of his speech, and we'll update you throughout the evening. You've been listening to The Jason Rancher. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it, as always. Be sure to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Jason Rant Show.